Well, when we talk about the very first debate that we ended up having, that's a lot of times when the general election campaign starts in the minds of some of the people who are the least interested in politics. There are some people who say, hey, I'll tune in when they hit me in prime time with these debates. So that dynamic that was able to be start off in that first debate really kind of opened the eyes to a number of voters, not the majority of voters, but a number of voters who really try to avoid paying attention up to that point. And then when we ended up having the vice presidential debate just the other day, that one really wasn't aimed as much at those casual political fans as it was aimed towards people who maybe dig in a little bit more. Because in an election like this, where you have these outsized personalities of Donald Trump as well as Hillary Clinton, who've been in the public eye for decades, a lot of times whatever the vice presidential candidates have to say isn't really going to sway their core supporters. Really, we ended up seeing both of the vice presidential candidates using that time really more to either try to clean up for mistakes or deficiencies that maybe they thought that their presidential running mate may have had. Or in the case of Tim Kaine, he really was setting up things almost like he was scripted to set things up for potential ads as well as talking points later on. Coming out of that vice presidential debate, I really thought that the Trump campaign would once again go into spin control, much like they did after the first debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, because even though Mike Pence on the surface had a strong performance in terms of keeping his composure, having a lot of information, there were a number of times where Tim Kaine, and kind of being a little bit more aggressive, he ended up maybe not scoring points at that very moment, but he ended up setting up Mike Pence to have to either defend or choose not to defend Donald Trump. And there were a number of times where his defense of Donald Trump can basically be rebutted with either video, audio, or both of either him or Donald Trump saying the opposite of what was said in that debate. So that's one of those things that's like a time release capsule that at the time when you're watching it, Mike Pence really was handling things. But then Tim Kaine, I think at the instruction of the Clinton campaign, really just was that bulldog and really setting up things where they probably already had some of those ads almost queued up and ready to go, just to have that contrast between Mike Pence's decisions to defend or not defend, along with the realities that they had on tape and audio.
NPR's taken quite a lead in fact-checking, real-time fact-checking, as the debates have gone on. And, of course, there's any number of places you can go to see the after-the-fact fact-checking and the score counts of who told more lies. And who pays attention to that?
I think that you end up seeing people, particularly in this era of social media, this era of people kind of collapsing time and watching debates when they want to watch them, taking on the news that they want to see. We end up seeing people have these types of fact checks and other things like that really show up in their Twitter news feed or their Facebook news feed. So for the people who want that information, it's going to be there. We live in an era of boutique politics where or boutique political coverage where people kind of go where they want to go to hear information that will reinforce ideas that they already have. So if you have someone who is, you know, very staunchly, deeply conservative and interested in Donald Trump, they're probably going to seek out news sources that would end up propping up Trump and his ideas. And the same thing could be said for people who are deeply connected with Hillary Clinton and more of a liberal cause, or I guess in her case, you know, a more moderate liberal cause. You're going to have them go to places, you know, hear from them, their friends and other things. For the part of America that still wants to hear, you know, I guess a little bit more unbiased coverage, they may actually pay attention to the difference between candidates, who's lying when, what are they lying about, and try to measure it out. But I think the portion of the American public or the American electorate that would pay attention to it right down the middle is a lot less now versus 20 years ago, or particularly 40 or 50 years ago.
What do you expect on Sunday night? The format is not one we haven't seen, but it is different from a strict debate, although we haven't really had a strict League of Women Voters debate, you get this much time, you get to come back with this much time, and then you get 20 seconds, and then we're going to move on. But Sunday nights is going to be more of a town hall where the candidates will actually get to move around, I guess. They won't be sitting in a chair behind a podium or anything like that.
One thing that we see a lot of political pundits and analysts talking about with this particular election cycle is kind of like an erosion of respect on both sides. I mean, we can see it when it comes to respecting the moderators and calling for time or even answering the questions that have been posed. And that's not something that either one of the parties has the market cornered on. We've seen candidates from both sides, both in the presidential and vice presidential debates, really not have the highest respect for either the moderators, the time, the questions that have been asked. And that dynamic is one thing when you're talking about Lester Holt or Elaine Quijano, who are professionals. There are people there who are doing a job. They work for major news networks. Nobody at home is saying, wow, I really feel for them and the salaries that they make and doing their job. Whereas when you have a town hall format where you have co-moderators who are basically kind of keeping the peace but not really inserting themselves into the situation, and you have the questions being asked by average Americans, the dynamic becomes a lot different. I was talking to my students the other day, and I was telling them about the difference between, let's say, Donald Trump kind of interrupting or talking in a certain way to Lester Holt versus Grandma Betty from Missoula, Montana, or Hillary Clinton kind of, making a face or really not considering the question and moving on to her own agenda with Lester Holt versus Grandma Betty. And those dynamics are a lot different, and the American people can relate to the people in a town hall a little bit more than they can to professional journalists. So Donald Trump has his own quirks, as does Hillary Clinton, and the dynamics of the ways in which they are good or not good in dealing with members of the public will really be on full display here. And neither Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump have the type of skills that we see in candidates like a Ronald Reagan or a Bill Clinton or Barack Obama in terms of those high level of communication skills and really even when given a tough message, being able to deal very well with members of the public. Each Hillary Clinton and or both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump have their own issues that they'll have to try to overcome. And we'll see if preparation gets them ready for this.
If you were the coach for either one of the candidates or both, what would you recommend to Hillary Clinton? What would you recommend to Donald Trump based on the performance that they had in their first encounter?
Well, with Hillary Clinton, I would tell her to think back to the part of the debate from the other week when she was asked about her emails or that issue came up, and she gave a very succinct answer. She seemed earnest in her answer, and she moved on to the next thing, but she gave an answer. She gave an answer, and she didn't try to give excuses or anything like that. I think when dealing with the American people, they're going to want somebody who's going to be direct. They're going to want somebody who's going to at least appear to be honest and really considering the question that's been posed to them, even if it's a short answer. For Donald Trump, I think that there were many times where he either interrupted or he was very short in terms of not giving a short answer, but short in attitude with either his opponent or with the moderator. And that just won't fly when it comes to dealing with average Americans. So he's going to have to show that he can make that connection, that he can have a certain level of respect, and he can't let Hillary Clinton or the people asking the questions get under his skin in the way that he did in the first debate, because this whole dynamic with average Americans in there is a little bit different. I think one other thing I'd say for both of them is prepare, prepare, prepare. We've seen Hillary Clinton actually doing a number of town halls as part of her new stump speech that she's doing as she moves around. She incorporated a town hall format. Donald Trump's done it once or twice. I think that Hillary Clinton showed that she really put a lot of time into preparation before, and she's trying to prepare on the road. I think that Donald Trump tried his own way in the first debate, and it didn't hurt him with his core, but it didn't exactly gain him any support outside that core. I would hope and I would think that him and his team have been preparing, and I've seen some examples of him taking town hall style questions on the road. So hopefully he's preparing for that, and they do have a game plan. So I definitely would say prepare, and also know where you maybe would have deficiencies that could show up in this format differently than other formats.